Welcome back to the Practically Spiritual Podcast. This is Jessica Palmer of Jessica Palmer Official. I'm a breakthrough coach and personal development specialist. I'm all about helping people ditch existing mode, survival mode, and activate what I call thrive mode. So I've created this podcast in accordance with my mission, which is to create collective change through conversation and remarkable transformational experiences. So grab a coffee, grab a wine, whatever you like at all, and I hope you enjoy this transmission. Welcome back to the Practically Spiritual Podcast. I'm so excited to welcome this beautiful guest, Emily Shine. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes. Oh my gosh. This podcast has been a long time coming.
It sure has.
Yes. I'm so excited to speak with you. And, I love the energy that you bring to the world. I love the medicine that you have. And I also just love the person that you are. Like, I genuinely enjoy being in your company. I'm like, this is like my person. Like, I'm down.
Thank you so much. I feel 100% the same. I definitely felt that soul sister vibe the moment I met you. I'm like, yes, this is my people. This is the energy I want to be around. Yeah,
totally relate. Totally. So much fun. And, you know, for those of you, the people that are listening that, may not know who Emily Shine is yet, so exciting. You guys need to know who Emily is. So I'm so glad that you're listening. Could you share a little bit about who you are and what you bring to the world?
Yeah, sure. Okay. So first and foremost, one of the things that I know a lot of people really struggle with, especially when they're starting out, I guess, in their spiritual or not even spiritual businesses, they could just be any business venture. Sometimes people have a real struggle around trying to figure out that label, that one thing that they are, because they kind of wear many hats and they have lots of different levels of genius. And this is kind of something that I relate with a lot. So whenever I have to explain, you know, what it is that I do, I always sort of go, okay, I'm going to roll out the scroll and then I'm going to talk about all the things that I've done and all the things that I do. But I think that the most important answer that you can give to this question is the reason why you do what you do. And for me, my why is stationary, but my what can interchange depending on who's standing in front of me or who's needing that help and that assistance. So that why is always to help the greater good, always to help the collective consciousness and to help heal the planet. So I do this through lots of different modalities. I started my business venture, I suppose, at 19. And so that's coming into 11 years, 12 years. Jesus, it's a long time. As a professional clairvoyant and intuitive. So I was conducting readings for people professionally. And at the same time, I was working in natural health in chiropractic, and I moved into working in a pharmaceutical company, which I stayed working alongside while I was building my business for the better part of 10 years. So I was in pharmacy and chiropractic before I started my business as well. So the thing that I loved about pharmacy was the natural health aspect of it, which is really what kind of got me going on to the healing modalities. And since then I've studied kinesiology and crystal healing and Reiki and flower essences, theta healing. Gosh, there are so many different modalities, which is really awesome because that allows me to have a nice big library and interchange those modalities depending on who's in front of me and who needs what certain medicine. So my title, I guess, is Emily Shine. that's what I do. I just be me and I just help wherever I possibly can. And the energy calls for different things at different times, but since then I've really focused 8 years ago. I'm sorry, I'm chopping and changing, but 8 years ago I started working with women's circles, and back then they were really unheard of. There was not really any space, especially for women who are wanting to delve into their spiritual sides. Back then it was still a little taboo. It was still a little, like, if you wanted to learn how to meditate or you wanted to know how to use oracle cards or anything like that, you were just a little bit Oh, that's a bit weird. Yeah. Are you a bit of a hit? Yeah, that's exactly it. So I wanted just simply to create a space where women could learn more about their spiritual selves, where they couldn't be, where they didn't have to put up with judgment and they could just take off that social armor. So when they first started, it was really quite a teaching platform, I suppose. And then it's just evolved as it's become more accepted to be spiritual into these spaces where women just get to come and take the social armor off and just connect and reconnect with themselves and with others. And that then evolved into retreats, which I started doing about 3 years ago. And they're probably my most favorite part of what I get to do today is that watching people connect.
Isn't it just so powerful to like witness someone just over, you know, half a day, a whole day, multiple days, just to watch that unpack and the journey, and you're like, wow, it's incredible.
It's one of the most powerful things to witness, really. And, you know, there's so many mixed opinions around retreats and around, you know, even just workshop days and what they can deliver to you. And, you know, you hear that people sort of say they aren't a quick fix. They're not an answer to all your problems. And that's certainly true. They're not. But sometimes it takes that opportunity just to be seen and to be fully understood and to be fully held to remember yourself. And it gives you the building blocks that you need to move forward in your life to be able to discover more happiness outside of that 1 day retreat or that 3 day retreat or workshop, whatever it is that you've attended.
I think as well, just to get people to stop, you know, like everyone is just so go, go, go. When you actually go, okay, I am going to commit to going to this, then you're creating the space to go and do that. Whereas if you didn't commit to it, you probably wouldn't do it. You'd probably just keep going and going and going. You'd never stop and process what's happened in your life.
Yeah, 100%. And I think I like to explain it a little bit like if anyone's listening who's been to like a yoga class or a meditation class or done meditation in your yoga class, and you've participated in it the whole time and you've, you know, seen it out through to the end. And even when you've done the meditation, you've been able to actually relax and switch off and get into the meditation. And then you've tried to do it at home by yourself and you haven't been able to get into it or finish your practice or really get into that meditative state. And it's because when you have set aside that time, when you have committed to it, when you are in a group where you're like, okay, there's nothing else to distract me from myself at the moment, you actually have that opportunity to go deeper. So it's like, it's a commitment, really.
It feels so safe as well. Like, you know what I mean? It feels so safe. And it's kind of like, well, it seems safe because everyone else is doing it. So it's like, oh, you've got this full permission piece. You're like, I can go there. It's actually safe for me to go there.
Yeah. You feel really held, I think, in those spaces. And I don't think that it's a, you know, a lack of evolution within the person, because, you know, us as practitioners who have been doing this kind of work for a long time, we still want to be those people sitting in the circle, not facilitating. We want to be held. We want to feel that feeling of being able to fully switch off. It's for everyone. Yeah. Such an amazing experience. And the other thing that I really love to see in those spaces is just the diversity of women that attend. You know, like the last retreat that I had, for instance, the oldest woman there was in her late 60s. And, you know, I had women who have never even meditated before, who had never even done anything slightly spiritual before, who were corporate. One of the ladies worked in a mine. Like, it was just an eclectic mix of people who had been on this journey for a really long time and people who had never even had any idea what they were stepping into. That's so and every beautiful. Single person walks away feeling some kind of clarity around themselves, some kind of epiphany, or even just simply uplifted and cleared. So, you know, for anyone who's listening and is thinking about going to any kind of retreat, any kind of spiritual or even non-spiritual, even just self-development retreat or workshop, take a chance on yourself, because the worst case scenario is you walk out with more knowledge about yourself, regardless of whether you liked it or you didn't.
Absolutely. And you'll also go, no, I don't like this one.
That's what I mean. Like, it's still knowledge.
Yeah, it's still knowledge. There's such a massive lesson in that as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, have you always, like, did you always know that you were going to do this type of work? Like, how did you...
Yeah, so
you're a child. Like, I just want to think about like Emily Shine as a child. Like, what were you like?
Yeah, so I guess it's an interesting story. And so one of the reasons why I really went into the helping sector of what I do is because I had a really tough life. And so I battled with lots of things externally to myself, which then affected my internal mental health. And then coming out the other side of that, I wanted to make a difference. But I had to do that from a space of natural health. I couldn't do it from a medical perspective because, again, through my story, which I'll go into in a second, that had been the only thing that had actually touched the sides for me. And I'd had a mixture of, you know, physical and mental health issues, which the medical system was just not helping me with. So I definitely had to go down to the natural health side of things. And alongside that, my family's always been very spiritually aware. So my mum and my grandfather are both clinical hypnotherapists. My grandfather was a psychotherapist as well. We would go to like what we call the gypsy fairs, which is basically a psychic fair these days, when I was little and my mum was full of crystals. And, you know, I remember one of my earliest memories of the house that we lived in. My mum was like saging the house, getting rid of like a spirit that was in there. And it was always very open for us. And, you know, my first card deck was given to me when I was 11 years old. So it was always on the, I guess, excuse the pun, it was always on the cards for me to develop into that, because that was the world I was born into. So that would be one of the reasons why I ended up in the space that I'm in. And I've always been really intuitive and could tell, you know, and I can see my own son doing it now. I always thought it would be my daughter that would pull up these gifts, because in some reason, you know, my mind just goes to, it's more of a feminine thing than a masculine thing. But it's, in my case, it's been my son that's been telling me when things are going to happen. And he'll tell me, he'll literally wake up and say, this is going to happen. And then it will happen later that day. He's insane. So apparently I was the same as a little kid as well. But really, I guess the reason why I got into really wanting to help women in particular is that from the moment I came into the world, it was a battle. So I was born into the world. My mum had a really abusive husband. So my father was really abusive. I was actually born after my mum was kicked in the stomach. So that was my entry to the world. It was kind of like, get out. And then my mum left my dad pretty young. I think I was like 1 or 2 years old. And so I never remember my parents being together, but I was starting to go to my dad's house every second weekend. And then at the age of 3, he sexually assaulted me. So I was pulled through the court system from 3 years old onwards. And that really affected my mum as well as me. And so she became quite heavily reliant on alcohol and remarried with a man who she's still with today, who I consider to be my dad, and who's a wonderful person through and through, but they are pretty volatile, or they, at least they were when I was younger, pretty volatile together. They just weren't, they were always on each other's case. And so there was always a lot of arguments around and a lot of heavy reliance on alcohol. So that feeling of safety was never really there for me from a really young age. And so growing up, because when you don't have that level of safety and you're always feeling threatened, even by the ones that you love the most or the ones that are there to kind of guide you, then you can become very anxious or kind of live in that fight or flight response for the better part, because you'll never know what's going to happen next. You don't know what's around the corner next. And so my mum actually left my stepdad when we were 9, and we had to basically leave in the middle of the night without me telling my friends or anybody that we were leaving, because he wouldn't have let my mum go. So I restarted my life at 9. It was just me and my mum, nobody else. All my siblings were living with their fathers. And I became the mum at that stage. Like, I had to grow up. I had to do the cooking and the cleaning and everything, because my mum was a great provider. She was always working, but she would come home and she would get drunk, and then I would do everything. So that was like the born part of me that always wanted to look after everybody else. And then she got remarried again, and had another baby. And at 42, I think, which was crazy. And they kind of had this happy family unit going on, and I wasn't a part of that. So I turned to alcohol myself. I would, you know, spend all the time out partying and doing all the wrong things. I never did drugs, but I definitely got myself into some, you know, pretty shady situations, and which led to more sexual assault by more men. And just that kind of roll-on effect of really low self-esteem because of those assaults being, and this is the thing about what we don't heal. We just keep repeating it until we heal. So I was repeating these behaviors, these situations that were just putting me in harm's way so that I could learn firsthand how to actually recover from them and get over them. And then when I was 15, I met a boy and I decided that he was my world and everything to me, and that I was going to save him because he was really damaged. And my mom said to me that I wasn't allowed to move out with him. So on my 16th birthday, when I was legally allowed to move out, she let him move in with us. And that was when the abuse started from him. So it was physical abuse every day, sexual abuse every day. And at 16, you just can't process that. So if I told anyone that this was happening, he would get kicked out and I would feel like I was the reason why he was hurt. And so at that time, I developed a really severe anxiety disorder. So I got agoraphobia and wouldn't leave the house. And I didn't leave the house for about 2 years. And with that, I was so sick as well, like physically really, really ill. I was like 50 kilos. I was ridiculously thin, couldn't hold any food down, and just kind of lived in this stuck space where I couldn't escape. And it took all of my willpower at that age. And I think I went to so many different psychiatrists and counselors and doctors, and I was in hospital and all sorts of things because I was so thin and no one could help me, until my mom eventually took me to a naturopath and she started to rebuild my gut and give me all these herbs that helped to deal with my stress levels. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden my gut health got better. So I could eat food again and I was feeling semi better, but the anxiety improved. I wasn't agoraphobic anymore, but I was still anxious and I still had this anxiety disorder. And I kept that anxiety until I was about 26 years old. Like, I lived like that for the better part of my life. I didn't do so many things. I didn't travel. I didn't, go to parties and things that I really wanted to go to because I lived in this space of being trapped by anxiety. And I've had two children to two different fathers in between that. It's a really big story. But the first guy that I met outside of this relationship that was really abusive was a drug addict. And so I didn't know that he was a drug addict. And I spent, 6 years with this man and didn't know that he was a drug addict. He would just disappear in the middle of the night on me and not come back and turn his phone off. And he'd be up all night. And I had no idea because I'd never done drugs. So I didn't know what the signs were, but he just got worse and worse and worse. And then it all came out that he was not only a drug addict, but an intravenous drug addict. So like really full on. And I was pregnant and I was, when I found out I was pregnant and I was in this country alone because my parents had since gone back to New Zealand where I'm from, and I didn't get any payments from the government. So I didn't know what to do. And so I had to work three jobs to basically provide for myself and my son. Wow. And then I met my daughter's father, and he was like this knight in shining armor that came along and was, letting me know that he was going to fix everything. And all he ever wanted to do was be a father. And I'm like, this is great. This is perfect. This is the person I need in my life, because all the other men haven't been ones to stick around to be father figures. And so he came along. I was pregnant within 6 months of meeting him with my daughter. We got married 3 years later, but the entire relationship was controlling. He was narcissistic. He loved the kids, but not really me. He signed up for the family, not me. And so that broke me down even more. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up having a nervous breakdown, fully had a nervous breakdown, a proper nervous breakdown. Again, got really, really sick like I had in the past, gut health out the window, all of these things. Because the thing is with stress is that it then affects the gut health. And so you can't digest anything. You can't assimilate your nutrients. And so everything is kind of all connected. And I had to learn this firsthand, right? Like, I can't learn anything unless I have to go through it myself first. So again, I went back to, all of these different ports of call that I had done last time to try and figure out what it was that I needed to do to rebuild my health. My marriage, thankfully, broke down in that time. And when I rebuilt that time, the best thing in the world happened. My mental health completely healed, because in that stage, I had actually stood up for my personal power and said, no more. I don't want any of this anymore. I'm not going to accept this kind of relationship, this man. I had repeated my cycle for the last time. And that was, I feel like that was my breakthrough point. Like, we always have breakthrough points in our lives. Like, there's probably many breakthrough points in people's lives. But for me, that was my biggest breakthrough point, to be able to walk away and go, right, I can actually fully immerse myself in this world of being there for other people, because now I fully understand what it feels like to be there for me. And so I did that. I, you know, had a few years there where it was just me and I was with my kids and it was great. And then this amazing man walks into my life and we've been together for 4 years now. And he is the most amazing person in the world. We've probably had 5 arguments in the 4 years we've been together. Like, we are just so perfect. And I love telling people that story because you meet people all the time and they're like, oh no, I'm just terrible at relationships. I always pick the wrong guys. Like, my cycle is the wrong guys. My parents always picked the wrong, like, relationships, all of these things. But this is the point. It's because you haven't healed from the initial trauma. So throughout that journey, I also had a lot of help to get there. I met someone through a mother's group when I had my son, who was a kinesiologist. She introduced me to kinesiology. I freaking love kinesiology. If you haven't ever had it, you have to try it. It's the most amazing thing in the world. And the moment I tried it, I was like, this is what I have to do for people.
I have to feel it. I feel like I have to confess right now, I haven't tried it.
You've got to try it. Like, it's just really incredible.
Like, everyone's told me about it. I just haven't tried it yet. But I'm like, yeah. I can tell from what everyone else's experiences when they tell me, I was like, oh my gosh, that sounds incredible.
Yeah, it is. It's so, for the people who are listening who don't know what it is, it's basically the general gist of kinesiology is muscle testing. So what we're going to do, what we do is we create an accurate indicator muscle. So we use one of your muscles to, I guess, contact initiate contact with your innate awareness. So your body knows everything that's going on. It knows all the trauma that you're holding onto. It knows what's being created and why. And so we can use your muscular system to tap into that and ask heaps of questions, figure out when it started, figure out what the bottom domino is, and then ask your body what it needs to be able to resolve that stress. Because it's all around the body being able to initiate its own healing cycle, not about being reliant on somebody else or something else or this tincture or that tincture. It's like, well, hang on a minute. Why isn't your body working? You know, why isn't your body resolving its own stress?
Yeah.
Well, it's because I've got this massive block here and this is why it's here. And this is when it arose for me. And so we can work on so many different parts of the body. We can work on the neurological side of things. We can look at the brain. We can look at the physiological side of things. We can look at, your glands. You can look at bacteria and viruses that haven't been resolved out of your body. You can look at emotional traumas, things that you created from past lives even. You can look at things that are happening in other dimensions.
I find that so everything. Past life stuff. That's where I'm like really curious. I'm like, I want to know.
Yeah, it's really interesting stuff. Actually, my grandfather was a past life regression therapist. Like, that was his area of expertise. And that was before we had the internet and before any of this stuff was like really well known. And so that's something, yeah, I really grew up. I had my first past life regression when I was 6 years old. Like, my grandfather put me down and in the chair and he's like, okay, we're going to do some hypnosis. We're going to find out where you came from. And I can still remember the regression to this day. But the interesting thing about past lives is that the more you look into it, the more of a rabbit hole it becomes, because there is not really like this, there's this whole concept of past life, but we all know that time doesn't really exist, right? So what's really past and what's not past, like it's actually all can be happening simultaneously on different dimensions, which is why sometimes things can relate back in, or we can be recycling things or feel like we're pulling things through, because we can have these cords attached to different parts of our lifetimes happening simultaneously. Yeah. So again, massive rabbit hole. But with kinesiology, we can identify if there's anything running there that hasn't come to completion or hasn't returned to what we call the monad, which is the I am, which is the self. So if we can identify that, then we can say, hey, body, what do you need to be able to like bring yourself to a place of self-mastery around that lifetime? Like, what do you need to no longer be running the energy there? And your body might be like, oh, look, I just need you to detach this cord, or I just need, something through my base chakra, or I need something, I need a certain flower essence even. So your body might just need some kind of kick along just to help resolve that stress.
Totally. And like, it's funny because, the first two times I was pregnant, I didn't have that consciousness happening. But the third time that I was pregnant, you know, I'd gone through that full journey and really claiming like who I am, who I, what I'm bringing to the world, and just leaning into whatever is going to happen is going to happen. And I remember after I gave birth to her, and like the first time that I was separated from her, I really could feel, like, energetically, I could feel an actual cord still attached to her, because I thought, you know what, I'm going to create some space for myself. And I thought I'd go to like a meditation circle. And this is like a few weeks after giving birth. And I'm like, I feel like I should really create some space for myself. And then I realized in that moment that it's not actually what I wanted, but I had to go out and do that to be like, okay, this is not what I want. I want to be with the baby the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I could feel it. Like I could genuinely feel that cord. Like I could feel it because I tapped into myself so strongly before I got pregnant that third time around. And I'm just, yeah. And even now, like you're saying about these cords, like you can feel so tapped into, like, I totally get what you're talking about.
Yeah. Cords are interesting things. Like there's some misconceptions around cords as well, which is like, so, you know, that like the feeling that you're feeling of that cord, that is 100% what you would have been having. Like there would have been an etheric cord between you and your daughter at the time. However, it's not necessarily healthy to have a cord there. So what actually happens there is that you're sharing each other's energy. And so have you ever felt that notion where, you know, you're having a really bad day or you just have a really low patience and all of a sudden your kids are just completely ratchet for the entire day? It's like they feel it, they know it, and they're just like, right, like I'm losing the plot because you've lost the plot. That can be because you're in each other's energy and you're actually feeding off each other's energy, which can be exhausting. So this can happen in relationships with people as well. It can happen with siblings, mothers, anything like that. So you can have cords to all different kinds of family members, which you may have been the one subconsciously to initiate that cord. Like, I'm going to protect you. I'm going to give you all of my energy because you need it. So your subconscious mind has gone, I will attach the cord, or maybe they've attached it to you. But by detaching the cord, you're not actually going to change anything about your bond or even about the empathy that you feel towards them, in a sense that you'll be able to feel when they need you. But what you won't be doing is sucking all of their energy out of them, or you, or them sucking all the energy out of you. You'll actually have your sovereignty back.
That is so powerful.
Yeah. So everyone should have their own energy. This is the thing, like cords come up a lot in my sessions and I'm like, I need to remove this cord. And especially mums are like, wait a minute. No, like I want to keep the cord. I'm like, you don't want to keep the cord. You don't lose your bond by not keeping your cord.
That is really powerful.
Yeah.
Wow. My gosh. This is incredible. It's so funny. It's crazy how like you have so much knowledge.
It takes years and years, I think, to kind of come to a place where you have all of this stuff in your head. And I think for me, it's like
a whole lifetime.
Yeah.
And not just knowledge that you have learnt yourself, but that has also been passed down to you.
Definitely. And I think all knowledge, well, unless you've channeled it through, I think all knowledge is learnt and passed down through the ages. And that's one of the most beautiful things.
Oh. That is so beautiful. And like, what is the knowledge that you want to pass on to your children?
There are so many things that I want to pass on to my children. I think the one thing that I keep going on and on and on and on about to them is kindness is the most important thing that you'll ever need to cultivate in your life. My philosophy on, you know, passing down spiritual knowledge to them is giving them an understanding or an awareness that things exist, and then giving them the power to be able to choose what their belief systems are. So my two children, they come from, well, they've got different dads, but they come from the same, you know, it's the same environment essentially. And they are so different in their belief patterns. It's not funny. And I think it's so cool that they're very, both very headstrong. My son's like, you know, I believe in God. I believe in the universe. I believe that there's so much more out there. And my daughter's like, there is no such thing as God. God doesn't exist. There's only nature. That's all there is. It's just nature. I'm just like, both of those opinions are totally okay with me. Like whatever you feel is your truth is your truth. So when it comes to spiritual knowledge, I'm sort of just like, well, you know, if they ask me questions about something, like they want to know what this crystal does, or they want to know what these cards mean, or they have asked me about, you know, what are angels or what are guides, and I'll tell them what my opinion is, but I'll always make sure that I say, this is my opinion, and anything to do with belief patterns is just that. They are belief patterns. So you must be able to make these decisions based on your life experience and what you've experienced to be true. No one can tell you what's right and what's wrong. So nothing is right and nothing is wrong. All of it's right. So whatever's right to you. But yeah, the one thing that I want to pass on to them is kindness. Kindness is the most important thing that a child can have. And, you know, I often say to them, if they're struggling with schoolwork or making friends or anything like that, I'm like, it doesn't matter whether you are, you know, a straight A student, or whether you've got lots of money, or whether you, you know, win every running race. Of course, I'll be proud of you for all of those things, but I'm going to be so much more proud of you just if you are exhibiting kindness to the world. And so it's quite funny because I'll say things to them, like, what do I always say? And they're like, be kind, because they're fighting. And it's like, be kind to each other.
Funny, but this morning I was like telling one of my children off for not being nice to their sister.
Yeah.
And like, we're literally having a conversation about kindness.
Yeah.
Be kind to your sister.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a very emotional time this morning, but
I think that's all kids, you know, kids doesn't matter how fantastic of an environment they have or how tumultuous an environment they have. Kids can be kids and they can be ruthless towards each other. And you know, we can't expect them to be perfect, but those are the learning curves that we need to recognize within them, of being able to practice humility and learn kindness.
Yeah. Oh, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the podcast, Emily. Thank you.
It's been lovely to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
And before you go, I always ask 4 questions, and
sure.
I'm really excited to know. Yeah. I'm excited about these answers.
Okay.
It's really interesting how you choose to answer this.
Okay.
So there's 4 questions. The first question is, what is your definition of spirituality?
Okay. So my definition of spirituality is well, I guess I need to reword it. So spiritual development, I always say it's self-development. So spirituality just relates back to the self, because as I was saying before with the kids, like, it's always your own interpretation of what that feels like to you. So I see the body as being a three-dimensional thing. So you've got your mind, your body, and your spirit. So your spirituality is just being able to explore your own spirit, your own soul, and what it craves, what it needs to feel more connected, to be more aware of itself. So spirituality is kind of a word that I almost try to stay away from, because I feel like it can be loaded around being one specific thing, but it's just a part of your soul and it's about you.
If you could ask the powers that be, and I feel that perhaps you already do, but but yes, the powers that be, so God, source, whatever that is for you, a question, and you get an answer, and you get to still be here present on the earth, you get the answer, what would it be? What would be the question?
Oh, that is a big question. I feel like I need time to think about that. Look, a part of me wants to say I don't want to ask a question, because there is something in experiencing for me, like there's something in the journey to being able to answer those questions for yourself, which I think is more potent than actually having the answers. Throughout my time, all of the things that have gone wrong in my life have really been the deliverance of all of the things that I've needed to make my life what I want it to be. So sometimes for me, having answers to those questions could almost negate the real reason of wanting it in the first place, if that makes sense. But I also feel like that's a total cop-out not to answer the question. So half of me is like, that's genuinely how I feel, like it's not.
Yeah.
It's not that.
Is there right or wrong?
Yeah. But maybe right now on my heart, if I honestly got that phone call, like, you can ask one question and get an answer, then I would probably be like, when are we going to get out of isolation? When can we go back to normal? That would be my answer. That would be my question right now.
Yeah, the cabin fever is real.
Yeah, it would be that simple. It wouldn't be something super profound because, as I said, I feel like the journey to that awareness is so much more important. It would just be something immediate, just like, when can we go back to normal? I miss hugging my friends.
Yeah, that's such a human question. I love it.
And that's something that I really like emphasize a lot with when I talk to people in conversation or when I talk to clients or when I try to portray myself in any kind of public forum is that I am very much a human. And I think that, you know, no matter how profound or spiritual you become, you are still a human being and you're a spiritual being having a human experience for a reason. Like if you're meant to be so up in the clouds that you have every answer to everything and you're so euphoric where you have no human existence anymore, then you've actually missed the point of why you're here on this planet right now.
Totally. So
all the humanness is absolutely okay. It's great. It's what makes us who we are it's our identity essentially. So I really like to embrace that and give permission for people to just to be superhuman because I am superhuman.
I love that. So third question, what happens when we die?
Okay. So again, it's relative to everybody's belief patterns, but my belief pattern is that we have soul clusters. So we have clusters of souls in which we kind of travel around with. So sometimes when we move or when we shift from this reality, so this dimension or this kind of third dimensional space, and we go into a fifth dimensional space. So that's sort of like, it's what I refer to as source energy, but it could be what other people say the other side or heaven or whatever it is that's on the other side of this third dimensional space. Sometimes we wait for our left behind souls. So that's why we get spirits kind of hanging around and being able to be contacted. And I believe that time is obviously it's irrelevant everywhere, but time really is super irrelevant on the other side. So what can feel like a lifetime to us can feel like a glitch to them. So if you've got a loved one that's waiting on the other side for you, then they could be waiting for 50 years of your lifetime, but it only feels like, you know, a day to them. Like it doesn't feel like a long time. So I feel like it's almost like a holding space where souls can wait for each other if they intend to watch over or be able or be available for communication. And then we kind of can go into either different dimensions, different planets, or reincarnate back into this physical realm in a different body. And that's where my belief of the sort of past life progression happens, because we never really, our soul doesn't really die. It just kind of recycles into new realities. And that reality could be in existence here on this earth, or it could be in a reality that's on another planet or in another dimension. So that's my belief pattern. That's what my experience along my healing journey has led me to understand and communicate with.
So fascinating. Amazing. So this final question is a basically finish these sentences. This is how, you know, people speak about you. So the first fill in the blank, finish the sentence, is Emily made me feel.
Like myself again.
Emily was always.
Completely goofy. No, I am goofy. Really kind. I so pride myself on that. I genuinely am a super kind person. And I think 9 times out of 10, most people would agree.
Yeah, 100%. Like I know, like I saw on your Facebook page, you know, like you dropped something off to like your neighbors. Like, I don't know, it was like some cookies or some type of package. You took some type of package to your neighbors.
Yeah, we have an old man that lives next door to us and he's like the nicest person you'll ever meet in your life. His wife died, I think, about 5 years ago. So he just lives there. He's in his 90s, but you wouldn't imagine that he's in his 90s. He's so like fit and he's still in the garden and all the rest of it. But he just lives there by himself. That's so incredible. Yeah, I baked him some scones and made him some jam and some hand sanitizer and brought it over to him. And yeah.
I want to be your neighbor.
Oh, he's amazing. So lovely.
Oh, that's so beautiful. So the final one is Emily taught me.
Without sounding too pretentious, so many things. Like I guess that that brain that I have, that sponge brain that I have for so many levels of different information, especially when it comes to those areas of genius, is that one of the things I love to do is pass that on. So I'm really now moving forward in my career into a space where I get to teach so much more and relay some of that information. So the teaching question would be so many different things, because it could be teaching them about themselves or teaching them how to connect with themselves, or it could be actually hard information, like it could be spiritual information or health information. But yeah, I think so many things. It's a good answer. Like, Emily taught me so many things, which sounds, it feels really modest of me to say that, but I actually get so, I feel warm about that. That's what I want to do. I think
it's quite clear, like listening to this conversation, like all of the, and like, I can tell that this is just like, we're just like touching, you know, the top, the surface of what you actually have this knowing of.
Yeah.
Knowledge of your wisdom. Like, yeah, I feel like there's so much.
Yeah. I don't even know what it is that's in there until someone sits and questions me and has a conversation with me. Yeah. And it's actually so much fun to be able to have conversations with people and go, I've got some information about that.
You're like a walking, like, spiritual university. Like, I swear you are. Like, it's like, oh my gosh. And guys, like, if you ever want to learn anything, you want to, of course, experience Emily's magic. But, you know, I think as well, like, that spiritual mentorship piece, I think a lot of people are really looking for that and they don't know how to start. And the other thing is, yes, you can know something, but to be able to teach it is also another skill in itself. So it's so amazing that that's something that you offer as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually starting a course in a month's time, so in May.
Amazing.
And it's teaching people how to connect in with themselves and all the information around spirituality, about the energetic systems of the body, and also teaching people how to muscle test and do kinesiology on other people. So it's a fantastic precursor for any other modality, because you can use it if you're a naturopath, you can use it to muscle test people for vitamins. If you're a coach, you can muscle test to find out where people are most blocked. If you're a crystal healer, you can muscle test to find out what crystals people need. Like, it literally translates into every modality. So it's going to be epic, and I can't wait to teach that.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Where can everyone get in touch with you and follow you?
So EmilyShine1111 on Facebook and Instagram, and EmilyShine.com is my website with all of my contact details and information on upcoming events and courses.
Amazing. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Practically Spiritual, the podcast. Be sure to make sure you are following this podcast on Instagram at practically_spiritual. And if you would like to follow me and also sound off, tell me what you thought of this episode. If you have any questions for the guests that we had or any comments or requests, let me know. I love connecting with you guys. So you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, all the places, using the handle at Jessica Palmer Official. Keep striving, keep thriving, and I'll catch you on the next episode.